Radio Prague News. The outgoing Prime Minister, Jiří Paroubek, has said he will reconsider handing in his resignation on Monday. The situation in most flooded areas of the country has stabilized. Clean-up operations are now underway. And the first same-sex marriages took place in the Czech Republic over this weekend. The outgoing Prime Minister, Jiří Paroubek, told Czech TV that he would reconsider handing in his resignation on Monday, which would trigger the fall of his cabinet. Mr. Paroubek said that he had intended to open the way for a new administration, but since President Klaus had made it clear that he would not accept the resignation at this stage, it would be an empty gesture. The Prime Minister said he would leave the decision in the hands of his cabinet. The political stalemate following June's inconclusive general elections has complicated talks on a future government setup. The situation in most flooded areas of the country has now stabilized and clean-up operations are underway. Only a few villages along the River Dyje are threatened by rising water levels due to a dam having burst in neighboring Austria. Close to 100 people had to be evacuated from villages in the southeast of the country, and there is damage to farm crops and roads. The full extent of the damage is not yet known. The first same-sex marriages in Central Europe took place at registry offices across the Czech Republic over the weekend as gay and lesbian couples took advantage of a long-awaited law on same-sex partnerships. The new law, which took effect on July 1st, gives gay and lesbian couples some of the advantages of a traditional marriage: inheritance rights, the right to be informed about the other's health, and the right to raise children, although they cannot adopt them. It has taken 7 years of lobbying to get this legislation approved, and the Czech Republic is the first post-communist country to legalize gay marriage. The Sokol, or Falcon, athletics body, a physical exercise organization founded in 1862 during the Czech National Revival, is holding its 14th All-Sokol meeting at Prague's Strahov Stadium this week. Some 18,000 gymnasts of all ages from all over the world are taking part. The Sokol athletics body is one of the oldest organizations in the world. Its modern era began with its revival after the fall of communism, but even during the dark period of Czech history, expats around the world kept its spirit alive. The All-Sokol meeting takes place once in 6 years. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Welcome to Radio Prague. I'm Jan Wellinger. In today's show, favorite programs like Mailbox, in which we respond to listeners' questions and comments, Letter from Prague, a personal look at life in the Czech capital, and Czech books presented by David Vaughan. Today, David talks to the translator of one of the most well-known interwar books by Czech author Vladislav Vančura. But now it's time for Mailbox, and that's presented also by David Vaughan, along with Dita Asiedu.
Hello, and this week, instead of our usual mailbox, we'll be announcing the winners in our annual listeners competition. Now, Pavla is on holiday, and she's hopefully enjoying the summer sun. So, the announcement has been left up to me and David. If you remember, we asked you to identify three different Prague sounds.
And we did get a lot of answers from all over the world, although, in fact, not quite as many as last time, and I think there's a good reason for this, simply that the competition was extremely tough. Even if you didn't get all the right answers, though, we will send you something, a small souvenir. In fact, it's already in the post. And many thanks to all of you who took the plunge and sent in the answers, as I said, even if you didn't get them all right.
Well, here are the correct answers.
Ukončete prosím výstup a nástup, dveře se zavírají.
Now that sound is from the Prague Metro. It's from, I think, line C, one of the three lines of the underground system that carries over 1 million passengers every day. The announcer is asking the passengers to stand clear of the doors.
And here's the second sound.
Píše nám i hned na pomoc. Voláme všechny Čechy.
Americans and English, help us. We need guns. There are too many Germans.
Rada hovorí. Krásná armia. Nám nutná vaša pomoc.
I think there were quite a few clues, actually, in that sound. That was from the Prague uprising against the German occupation in 1945. It's a collage of different voices that were broadcast from this very building between the 5th and 8th of May, as the battle raged to liberate the city. And, well, this radio building itself was besieged.
And the third sound?
Well, this one proved, I think, for many of you to be the toughest. It is, in fact, Prague's famous astronomical clock on the Old Town Square, which dates back to the Middle Ages and includes figures of the 12 disciples. And, well, yes, that strange sound at the end, it's a cock that crows on the hour.
But most importantly, when it came to choosing the winners, we also asked you to write a few words inspired by the three sounds.
So, now for the winners.
We chose 12 finalists, two from each department. Now, I won't name all the finalists, but here are the two from the English section.
They are Alan Raab from Oregon in the United States and Brian Kendall from the United Kingdom.
Now, congratulations to both of you. And we really enjoyed reading your answers inspired by those three sounds. We'll certainly come back to them in a future edition of Mailbox. And we'd also like to mention 8 other listeners who wrote in English whose answers we particularly enjoyed.
There's Roger Chambers from New York, Tony Nuttall from the UK, Mary Lou Krennick from Texas, Jonathan Murphy from Ireland, Roy Kitson from the UK, Donald Schumann from Colorado, Christopher Brooks from Minnesota, and Christina Fallin, or Fallin, from Illinois.
Now, this was a competition which involved all 6 of Radio Prague's language sections, so we faced the tough task of choosing an overall winner.
So let's have another fanfare to announce the winner of A Week for Two in Prague, courtesy of the Hotel Falkensteiner Maria Prague. The winner is Dmitry Balykin from Nizhny Novgorod in Russia. And Dmitry will be coming to Prague later this year.
Well, we don't have much time, but David, if you could just read a short extract from the competition entry by Dmitry.
Okay. The second sound is the appeal with which the participants in the Prague uprising turned to the Allied troops. From Radio Prague's programmes for the 60th anniversary, I discovered that throughout the post-war years, the official attitude to these events was ambiguous. Czechoslovakia was liberated not just by the Soviet army, but also by the Americans. In the days of socialist Czechoslovakia, only the Soviet soldiers were honoured. In the 1990s, everything changed. Suddenly people spoke of the Americans as the main liberators, and the role of the Soviet armies was neglected. But by the time of the 60th anniversary, Czech attitudes to our common history seemed to change again. Veterans from all the countries that had liberated Czechoslovakia were invited to the commemorations, and major celebrations took place in all areas of the Czech Republic, regardless of who had liberated them.
So that's a short extract from the winning entry by Dmitry Balykin. And we'll be hearing some more extracts from some of your winning entries in future programmes. You can find all the winning entries on www.radio.cz. A big thank you to everyone who took part.
Mailbox with David Vaughan and Dita Asiedu. Now coming up, Letter from Prague with Stephen Weeks, in which Stephen talks about a number of churches here in the capital and some of the things he witnessed recently and at a past Christmas Mass.
I'll give you an instance of how an afternoon in Prague can work itself up into something special, even from a dull start. It was a Friday. I had finished a meeting at 2:30. It was wet and grey, but I suppose I should point out it was Good Friday. I was taking the cut through the old monastery garden that gets one to the Wenceslas Square tram stops when I had an idea. Instead of waiting 40 minutes at Masaryk station for my next train, I could pop into Our Lady of the Snows, the vast, tall monastic church across whose ancient garden I was now hurrying. Unlike most Prague churches, Our Lady of the Snows is usually open, and also, unlike many of them, it has retained a lot of its Gothic character. I could sit there for 20 minutes or so, as I had promised myself to do one day, to study its magnificent reredos, or altarpiece. The church itself is one of Prague's tallest, too, that being emphasised by the fact that it was once intended to be 3 times as long. Long ago, wars and religious disputes had drastically shortened its ambitions. So now it is mainly only the chancel of what was intended, soaring to a height of 35 metres. Desperate to reassert Catholicism across the land after the 17th century, the Habsburgs had undertaken Rococo makeovers for most churches. My earlier glance into Our Lady of the Snows had misinformed me that it too had been done over, the altarpiece being one of those florid orgies of stonework that resembles some wedding cake design for Sir Elton John, rejected as being too OTT. But sitting down now in the gloomy quiet, I could see I was wrong. The altarpiece was much earlier, was more that classical early Baroque of the 16th century. This reredos fills the east end of the building. It is immense, the tallest in Prague. It's like some great galleon that has blown in and got jammed against the angled end of the church. More than 2 dozen life-size figures cling to its rigging, topped by poor J.C. nailed to the crow's nest. There, up where the topsail should be, is the figure of Emperor Charles IV himself, holding on to his heraldic pennon for dear life. I was enjoying this freeze-frame movie in stone when I became aware that the church was filling up. Not the usual tourists, but the little old ladies who seemed to be produced exclusively to inhabit draughty pews or to kneel in dark confessionals. Good Friday, of course. A service was about to start. I decided I would stay. The trains were once an hour, after all. When the place was nearly full, in came a most beautiful young woman, led by her guide dog. She was wearing the most wonderful woollen jacket. It was of mossy colours in many hues. A dull, claret-coloured silk scarf perfectly complemented it. All this was strange, as poor blind people are so often dressed by someone else whose taste never seems to match them. Here was a girl from the Hollywood movie version of her own life. The three old dears, who were patently regulars, who shared my pew, were beside themselves with benign curiosity as the young woman, having deftly manoeuvred herself to a chair, began to unpack a large, plain black backpack, which she was carrying. By oft experience, she did this with the ease of the sighted, unpacking first a bed for her dog, then a blanket. She was obviously aware of the cold stone floor she'd otherwise be subjecting her faithful companion to. The dog took its ease and the service started. The priests and their retinue were 14 strong, standing in the chancel like extras waiting for direction, awkwardly and unrehearsed, as the cross made its solemn round of the building. Listening in a foreign language seems to stretch the time, and I was busily trying to work out just how many stations of the cross there were. Could there be as many as 14, I worried, or just a dozen? It dragged. The light began to fade on the altarpiece, but I was determined, when it all ended, to compliment that wonderful girl on her colours. If she couldn't see in the mirror, then I'd do it for her. Just this once, then disappear into the street. But as station 12 completed, I managed to make out the announcement of the priest that now Mass could begin. I didn't think I could survive another hour, so I slipped out. So much for my resolve to compliment the blind girl. The tram to the station took me past St. Yndrick's Church. I noticed its door was open too. But I had once been tempted to sit through a Mass there as well. In Christmas week it had been. I had taken communion, and on returning to my seat I noticed the man who had been sitting in front of me, hunched over something, had actually been sharing Mass with a strange doll, a knitted thing with a weird blank expression. As the Mass had ended, he had carefully taken off the doll's lace cap and wrapped that in tissue paper, and then packed his doll away in a shopping bag. Who was she, symbolically, I wondered? His late wife? His dead mother? Or perhaps the woman he never married but still longed for? I would never know. That had been another one of those afternoons when I'd been tempted to go into church doors in Prague.
Stephen Weeks there with Letter from Prague. And that, of course, brings us to today's main feature, Czech books. Now we hand over the mic now to David Vaughan.
Vladislav Vančura is one of the best known Czech writers of the period between the First and Second World Wars. He is pretty much a household name to most Czechs, but he has often been described as untranslatable. His prose is very poetic, and some would say that his writing is dated, but nonetheless, the translator Mark Korner decided to take the challenge of translating what is probably Vančura's best-known book, Rozmarné leto, which he translates as Summer of Caprice, into English. I'm joined by Mark here in the Radio Prague studio. So, Mark, tell me, what was it that inspired you to take up really such a difficult challenge?
I wanted something to translate where the language was difficult and involved and demanding. I know that there are some people who think it is quite untranslatable, but on the other hand, people do try and translate even poems, so if this is a prose poem, that doesn't necessarily rule it out from translation. I also feel that in a sense nothing is translatable. And in a sense, everything's translatable. Of course, when you translate, you do inevitably change. That's true of anything, I think.
Tell me a little bit about what the book Summer of Caprice, Rozmarné leto, is about.
It is about a summer in which there is very little but rain, though the sky occasionally clears at night. It is set in a small spa town, which I translate as Little Carlsbad. And there is a little bit of the kind of small town mentality about the people living there, although they're also in many ways very charming. And the book centers around three eccentric characters, a major, a canon, and someone I translate variously as a bathing superintendent, and Magister Thermarum, and various other strange phrases, but he's basically someone who looks after the local floating swimming pool, or swimming pool on the edge of the river.
I think you've got a reading from near the beginning of the book, which does kind of set this scene, this rather sort of nostalgic, atmospheric scene, doesn't it?
Yeah. This is the moment when, with a song and a game of whimsy, the curtain opens on a tale set in the floating domicile of the Hussey family. Various light structures serving the swimming trade have been built onto Antony's raft-like erection, which has been tied at a point where the poplin Orsch has ripples along its back, sniffing at a sandbank that runs for as much as 100 yards. In this area, the bank on the town side of the river is covered in willows, which reach as far as the gardens of the leather dressers and wafer producers. Each year, the willows get out of hand, preserving an unmanicured appearance that almost exceeds the bounds of decency. No one trims them, and for those who make their way to the river, there is nothing but a smattering of footpaths, which are, alas, narrow. At the beginning of each pathway, an inscription has been fixed to an indifferently painted pole, which carries its message rather as a female donkey carries her saddle. The announcement reads, River Resort.
So that's beautifully setting the scene of this provincial riverside bathing place. Before we move on with the story, tell us a little bit about Vladislav Vančura. I mean, he was very much an important figure of the Czech literature of the time, both in terms of his popularity and also the fact that he was an experimental writer, wasn't he?
He was an experimental writer, and he had an interest in some of the most important experimental developments of the time. One was film. He wrote Rozmarné leto in 1927, at about the time that silent films were giving way to sound. And throughout his life, he had an interest in film and film techniques. So that it doesn't surprise me that this was so successfully made into a film by Iggy Menzel, because I almost think that Ventura in some ways anticipates this. And he also had an interest in medicine, and you can find some rather difficult medical expressions coming into his writing, which I had to think about for a very long time and also do some research upon. Thirdly, he has a particular sort of writing style which is, on the one hand, rather convoluted and old-fashioned. So you might be feeling, if you're English, you're almost coming across something rather like the King James Bible. But then it suddenly becomes, I won't say vulgar, but very down-to-earth. And I think to catch Ventura, you have somehow to combine these moments of being very down-to-earth with moments of being highfalutin, and you mustn't forget either. You mustn't be pulled too much in either direction, I think. So he has a distinctive style. I think he was interested in things that in his time were just becoming significant, like film. And, of course, he also had the association with resistance to Nazis, and he was executed in 42.
You talk about this plurality and this juxtaposition of different styles. Maybe one of the nicest things in the book is the way that the dialogue works. There's some very entertaining dialogue, isn't there, in the book, which of course is wonderful in the film version as well, and beloved of many Czech cinema goers. Could you perhaps read an extract where we can get a taste of this dialogue between the main humorous characters?
I'll try. This is when the three of them, the major, the canon, and the bathing superintendent, sit down to dinner together. "Let's tuck into the food and drink," said Hugo. "Bring me some dinner. Cheese full of fat, venison, poultry, lamb, anything born alive or hatched from an egg. Bring me anything I can eat that ripens, anything finned or skinned. Bring me all those gastropods consumed in civilized countries. Fetch them here. It is evening, the earth has done its rounds, and that is when custom dictates that we eat." "Would you say, Major," proffered the canon, "that you have become a glutton or a windbag? Do you wish to treat us to a display of your teeth or your tongue?" "If I knew my way around words, I would hold my tongue, just as you do, Padre," retorted Hugo. "Right then, I'm not ordering you to take up your weapons, but start attacking the food."
Well, that's, I mean, a lovely piece of dialogue. It's very entertaining. I mean, you say that people might find the book difficult, but I think if they do find bits of the book difficult, they'll certainly be kept going, won't they, by the humour and the lightness of parts of it.
I hope so. I think that is its great strength. It is divided into about, I would say, well over 50 sections in something that's quite a short book, in effect a novella. And each section has a title, and I almost think of them as titles of scenes in a play or a film, slightly more a film, I think. So it's a short novel divided into 50 scenes, each with a separate title, and you can almost imagine 50 separate scenes which are brought together in the atmosphere that they create. I'm not saying it is completely without a story. Things do happen. But the main point of it, I think, is to try to bring out the characters and the nature of life in the village rather than to tell a tale where you're all gripping your seat about whether or not the butler did it.
And we ought to mention as well this new edition itself, because it's absolutely beautifully produced, this English edition, and it's also illustrated.
Yes, yes. The Carolinum Press produced it, and it has illustrations by Jiří Grus, and I think they're wonderful. It is a hardback book with many, many different illustrations, some in a kind of sepia brown, which I think are very attractive, and some in full colour. They portray the main characters in the book, I think, very, very well. And I really do say, if you don't like the translation, you can always buy the book for the illustrations, because they are very, very nice.
And so I should repeat that the book is, well, it was published this year in 2006 by the Czech publisher, the Karolinum Press. That's Karolinum with a K. So, Mark Korner, thank you very much indeed for joining us here in the studio at Radio Prague, and really do keep up the good work, because it's marvellous, I think, the way that you're helping to acquaint an English-speaking audience with some of the classics of 20th century literature. I believe you're working on another very well-known Czech book from between the wars, which will be coming out soon.
Yes, I'm working on Karel Palaček's Bylo nás pět, and that will be completed by the end of this year, and I hope it will be out next spring.
And Karel Palaček is another Czech master of the short story or novella, so I'm very much looking forward to talking about that in a future edition of Czech Books. And that's all we have time for today. Don't forget that you can find that program again on our website, www.radio.cz, or you can also listen to it as a podcast if you choose. So until next time, from all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.